Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, fellow slaves of the global plantation. The Vinnie Eastwood Show is bad news. It's like the news, but worse. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't enjoy it. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinnie Eastwood Show, where the only thing worse than living in a high-tech global police state run by child-trafficking Satanists is Vinnie's jokes. And my very special guest joining me today on the anniversary of JFK getting his head blown off is John Hankey. Welcome to the show, mate. Glad to have you here.
Let's hear it for John Hankey.
Yeah.
if we can't have a laugh, you know.
Well, if we can't have JFK, at least we've got JH. So you were talking about some new things, and before we get into the discussion about here on this most auspicious of occasions, I would like to remind people that this is the very first time that we are broadcasting on the Ground Zero Radio Network at groundzero.radio, and I'm very glad that they've picked me up so soon after ending my show with Republic Broadcasting just 3 days ago. So yeah, doing potentially quite well over here at groundzero.radio, ladies and gentlemen. And if you are, of course, a Vinnie Eastwood subscriber, you can also follow us on Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook as well. Just search the Vinnie Eastwood Show on those, and it should be all G-Unit. Now, John, can you please give us a little bit of a background on who you are and what it is you do?
Well, let's see. I'll try to make this brief, but I've been an A-plus student all my life, right? And in the seventh grade, I was reading 800-page history books because that's what I knew that that's what was my interest. And, you know, I got A's in all my classes. And then when I was 20 years old, a friend of mine who got B's in all of his classes handed me a copy of the Zapruder film, an illegal copy of the Zapruder film, which is the film in the movie JFK where you see John Kennedy get his brains blown out. And I looked at that and I said, wait a minute, I don't know anything, do I? I've been studying hard all of my life and I don't know anything. And I went down to the library the next day and I got every book they had by Mark Lane and every book they had by Jim Garrison. In a couple of months, I was doing lectures at UCLA. We showed the Zapruder film, and then I lectured for a minute and took questions, and then I went to UC Santa Cruz and did the same thing. And then I got a job teaching for LA Unified, and I had English and history, and you know, guess what? My kids learned about the Kennedy assassination. And then I was listening to Pacifica Radio. I don't know if people are familiar with that, but this is 25 years ago at least. And the guy on the radio was talking about how Joseph McBride, who writes books about movies, and I spoke to him, and he told me how he was at the Hollywood Library doing research for a book on, he's got like four different books on Frank Capra and Frank Sinatra and all the other Franks in Hollywood anyhow. And he couldn't stand doing what he was doing anymore, and he got up and walked over and asked the librarian, you got anything interesting? And she says, well, they just declassified 200,000 documents from the Kennedy assassination files. And he said, oh, let me see one of those. And he's looking through them, and he found the memo written by J. Edgar Hoover that said that it's Mr. George Bush of the Central Intelligence Agency was briefed about Operation Mongoose the day after the assassination. They called him into FBI headquarters. And in any case, so here we have Mr. George Bush of the Central Intelligence Agency, and he said it wasn't him. But he also said he didn't remember where he was that day. And as with 9/11, I mean, people in your audience will recognize the fact that they could take you to the spot where they were when they saw a video of the Twin Towers come down. And I could take you to the spot in my elementary school where I was sitting when the principal came to the door sobbing to tell my teacher, who was then sobbing, that Kennedy had been assassinated. But he doesn't remember where he was. And there's also, just by the way, an FBI memo. Bush called the FBI the day of the assassination and told them that he was in Dallas. So we have this FBI memo showing that Bush was in Dallas and he doesn't remember. Anyhow, so I got into it and I made a video called JFK 2, The Bush Connection, and that was a huge hit on YouTube. They kept taking it down, but other people kept putting it up, and so it had a couple of million views at least, I mean, that I could document, and probably many more than that. Alex Jones, who is not my favorite person in the world, I was being interviewed on a radio show, and he called up and said, can I post your video on my website? And he did, and it's still there as far as I know, JFK 2, The Bush Connection. Anyhow, when I redid it, I paid an editor $15,000 to make it look nice, and Netflix picked it up, and they ran it for 2 years, which is very unusual for them with a documentary. Prime carried it for about 10 years, and then a couple of months ago, they both took them down. I also have a video about the assassination of JFK Jr. And by the way, you know, let me suggest to people that they go to Amazon. I think you can still buy the DVD of, it's now called Dark Legacy and Dark Legacy 2. And my new video is Breakthrough. And as your audience will learn today, there's a breakthrough in terms of what I know now. And it's all, you know, it's all very thoroughly documented. I can't help it if, and I don't know why, none of the other JFK researchers are picking up on this stuff, but I can tell you that they're not. Anyhow, am I done?
I think so. And, well, the whole potentiality here that is really concerning to me is that the methodology of government secrecy as it comes to false flag attacks or conspiracies is, it works like this. We're going to classify important information about it for a significant period of time. And then when we do reveal that information, a lot of the people who were really interested at the time are no longer interested, so they don't go and read it. And the very few people that are interested go and see it and then try to broadcast it, but nobody's interested in looking at it. And so by the time that a conspiracy really gets fully understood and the public are like, yeah, we all know that, all the people who were living at the time are dead, I think. Do you think that's...
Well, let me address that. That's what I thought. And then Dave Chappelle did a solid 45 seconds talking about the horror of the Kennedy assassination and how that introduced a period. And he says that our country was never the same. And he talks about how Kennedy wanted peace and that was the reason that he was murdered. And this is Dave Chappelle on Netflix. Well, that's pretty powerful stuff. Hulu put on this garbage piece from the National Geographic. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to say this. In the trailer, the central theme of the National Geographic special on Hulu, which Hulu was promoting for a minute at least, was that, of course, you know, lone assassin, blah, blah, Warren Commission, single bullet, just all the routine garbage. But in the trailer, there were three pictures of Kennedy's motorcade. And in one of the pictures, he's at the airport, and you can see that on the back of the limousine, there are these handles on the back of the limousine. Well, the handles are there so that a Secret Service agent can ride on that. And the first time I saw that, I said, why were there no Secret Service agents riding on the back of the limousine? Well, in this trailer, about 10 seconds later, you see the limousine. I'll say this as quickly as I can. From the airport to Dealey Plaza, the limousine drove about 10 miles down Main Street and then turned right onto Houston and immediately left onto Elm Street. And as the limousine is making the first right turn, you can see Clint Hill sitting on the back of the limousine. He's there. And I had seen that before this month, but today, or you know, this month, the National Geographic has now put this thing out where they show you Clint Hill jumping down as the limousine turns onto Houston and is getting ready to turn left onto Elm Street where the shooting is going to start. He jumps down. I had never seen that before, and it's there, and it's in the trailer of the thing that's trying to persuade you that the Secret Service was doing their job of protecting the president rather than doing their job of assassinating him. But, I mean, the evidence is just that thick that if you go very deep, you're going to be bumping into stuff that shows conclusively what the real story is. And anyway, to answer your question, that National Geographic stinko piece of garbage was number six on Hulu for a minute, right? It's number six. Hulu's got a lot of garbage that you can watch, but people are interested, apparently, in the Kennedy assassination sufficiently to drive that to number six. Rob Reiner, I don't know if people know who Rob Reiner is. He directed When Harry Met Sally. I think he directed Stand By Me. He played Meathead with Archie Bunker. He was Archie Bunker's son-in-law. And he's Carl Reiner's son, and blah, blah. It doesn't matter. He started a podcast a week ago, and it went on the JFK assassination, and it immediately went to number eight. So people are interested in the Kennedy assassination. They still are. And I have to tell you that when, you know, I've worked on this documentary for 50 years. I put my heart and soul into this thing, and it's 2 hours long, and my apologies. And it's called Breakthrough. And if you go to Vimeo and search for Breakthrough JFK, it'll come up, and you can watch it for 99 cents. Everybody got that? You can buy the DVD at Amazon, you know, for like $13 delivered tomorrow. And the thing about having a DVD is that when they completely cancel this and take it down everywhere, you will have a DVD that you can give to your great grandkids. And if you can Google how to do it, it's very, 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 very simple. If you open up a DVD so that you're looking at the files inside and pull out the 3 gigabyte file and transfer it to your computer, you now have an electronic file that you know it plays better than the DVD plays, right? Because it doesn't have to have a laser reading of it. It has the actual information. Anyway, buy the DVD. Be my friend and buy the DVD. Go to Vimeo and watch it for 99 cents. If you look around, if you can find my YouTube website, you can watch it for free. But, you know, we're all being suppressed, right? So you can often, there have been times when you couldn't find what I posted. You type in my name and the title of the video, you couldn't get it to come up. I forget what question I'm answering right now. You want to give me a hint?
Well, it was about how long a conspiracy happened ago and how many people are still around that have an interest in whether or not it's possible after that period of delay that you could actually have the entire populace, or at least 51% of the populace, know the actual truth, as opposed to on 9/11, where a good portion of the populace were suspicious but still don't actually know exactly what happened that day. So go right ahead, Aaron.
Well, but so Rob Reiner is number eight. Hulu, this garbage, was number six. Dave Chappelle, and geez, I had one on the tip of my tongue, but the Kennedys, oh my goodness. John Kennedy Jr.'s birthday, I think he was three, was the day of the funeral. And, you know, everybody's seen that, geez, heart-wrenching scene where John Kennedy Jr. salutes his father's casket at the funeral. People are very, very, very deeply moved by Kennedy and his history. And let me make this point now, because it's a good place to make it as to why people are moved. In my video, you will see in the first couple of minutes, John Kennedy at the United Nations. And you see revelation.
Oh, sorry, John, we seem to be having a little bit of a technical difficulty there. Go right ahead. Sorry, folks, we're having a bit of technical difficulties here. We're having trouble hearing John. John, try again. You say that you saw JFK at the United Nations, and he said, go right ahead.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, we're definitely not getting a clear signal here from you. You look like you've difficulty.
I just switched my connection, so I expect it'll be better.
One can only
hope. If that was the problem, better.
Go right ahead.
My bad. Okay. At the United Nations. So Kennedy, you know, brings the world to the brink of nuclear war. That's a story that we're not going to get into, but good gravy. When you have me back and we talk about the Cuban Missile Crisis, you won't believe it. Anyhow, he says, we have to stop this. The Russians love their kids. They want their kids to have a future. We need to stop this madness. And then his second revelation was, well, wait a minute. And he contacted Khrushchev, and Khrushchev said, oh, yeah, absolutely, definitely, let's do that. And Kennedy had the realization, well, if we're going to get rid of nuclear weapons, why don't we get rid of all weapons? And at this UN speech, he says, we're going to get rid of all weapons and all armies, and negotiations are beginning today to begin the step-by-step process to eliminate the military-industrial complex. Right? We're going to cut them off at the ankles. And so they killed him not very long after that. But that's one major reason that they killed him. Now, I hope people are listening and will listen closely for the next 45 seconds. In my video, you will also see, and it's the video's called Breakthrough, and here's why. A guy that I got to be friends with, he's Professor James Galbraith. He's at the University of Texas, Austin. He's got a chair, right? He's very, very, very prestigious and well-respected. And once I mentioned earlier, they declassified 200,000 documents, and some academic was in charge of this, and he calls up Galbraith and says, can I give you a box of documents and you go through them carefully? And Galbraith went through them, and he found the memo written by the head of the military, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Maxwell Taylor, saying the president has decided all personnel out of Vietnam by the end of calendar 1965, and he's writing it to the head of the Marines and Army and Navy and Air Force, saying, and every decision that you make henceforth will be directed at that. And he says, this language comes from the October 6th, or I think the date of the memo is October 6th, the October 1st, perhaps, TRIP report. This language is taken from the TRIP report. And when you go to the TRIP report at the National Archives, it's not there. The TRIP report is there, but that language that Taylor says he's quoting from has been removed from the official record, so that, you know, they're totally poisoning it forever and eternity. From now on, people trying to look that up will find they won't find what is supposed to be there. But we have instead, we did, right? This guy Galbraith found the memo that shows. Now, you're going to spend a long time finding anyone on the planet, certainly not a Harvard professor. You're never going to find a Harvard professor or a Yale professor saying that Kennedy decided to get out of Vietnam, or Princeton, and you'll find boatloads saying the opposite. Kennedy hadn't decided. In fact, what he did decide was to use napalm. That's what Ken Burns includes in his special on Kennedy and Vietnam. Ken Burns can't possibly keep up with me because he doesn't have the resources that I have. So, if you have a question, I'll go in your direction. Otherwise, I'm going to go to Lyndon Johnson.
Go right ahead.
And the Vietnam War. Well, let me throw in a quick second breakthrough. So a second breakthrough, and major, is that you tell me why it took 60 years to discover that in the days after the assassination, the two best witnesses, civilian witnesses, are Malcolm Summers and Gene Hill. They're the two most famous witnesses. They're on the grass. They're 15 feet away, perhaps 20 at the most, from Kennedy as his brains are getting splattered. And they both told the media that the limousine stopped. There are four, in my video, you will see four news people who were on the scene staring into the camera and telling you that the limousine stopped. Senator Yarborough was sitting sitting in a car just in front of Lyndon Johnson, as a matter of fact, and that's an important point, 30 feet behind Kennedy. And he told the Warren Commission in his affidavit, and he was furious. You can feel it in his affidavit that he's furious that the Secret Service stopped. They heard shots, and then they, because none of the shots killed the president, they had to park the limousine in front of the grassy knoll and wait for a shot to blow Kennedy's brains out. And he then told Geraldo Rivera, which is also in the video, you get to see him angrily tell Geraldo Rivera about how the limousine stopped. That's not in the Zapruder film. And there's a couple of points. Geez, there's... I have a huge advantage over you and everybody else, which is that I've had 5 years to think about all of the implications of that. But they're extreme. And one of the implications is that, and I show you in my video, I say, wait a minute. They took out the limousine stop in order to hide the fact that the Secret Service were, in fact, the primary agency, not the CIA, but the CIA couldn't have killed Kennedy if it wasn't for the Secret Service parking the limousine. If they'd have kept going, if they hadn't slowed to a stop and waited for 6 seconds, Kennedy would have exited Dealey Plaza with a hole in his throat. But they left in the shot from the front. And in my video, all you got, you know, it's relatively simple. I clipped out the portions of the video showing Jackie and John in the limousine, and I rearranged the order of them so that the body doesn't move backward and to the left. It moves forward and to the right, which would indicate a shot from the book depository, but they didn't do that. They handed it to us. We don't have Oswald's W-2 form showing that he was working for the CIA and the FBI on their payrolls. We don't have those, but we have a video of the president getting his brains blown out, you know, really, really horrible. How do you explain that? And they left in the shot from the front, and they released this in 1968. And because we don't have forever, I will tell you my explanation, which is that they wanted Nixon to get elected and they wanted to make Johnson look guilty, and it worked. I mean, when I was 20 years old and saw this is a long time ago, 50 years ago, I said Johnson did it, because you see that, right, that Kennedy got shot right to the average Joe looking at the Zapruder film. What you're overwhelmed by, what Jim Garrison was overwhelmed by, is the graphic visual showing that it was a shot from the front, which means that the Warren Commission lied, which means that Lyndon Johnson, who supported and appointed the Warren Commission, lied, and therefore they must be implicated, mustn't they? Excuse me.
It seems very similar to the methodology of the 9/11 Commission, where they didn't even mention Building 7, where the Dick Cheney and George W. Bush were not interviewed under oath, and it was behind closed doors with no records being kept. You know, it's sure. Basically, as soon as the government appoints a commission for something, it's usually because the government is involved in the commission of that crime.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but I don't see that. I understand that it's true, but to me those are circumstantial, and I don't see the clarity of the connection between them. But, you know, Jim Mars was one of the prime JFK investigators. I'm trying to remember the name of his book. I have it up on my bookshelf.
Crossfire.
Thank you. Very good. Crossfire. And he and I have spoken on, well, he's deceased now, all praise and glory. And he and I both, on September 11th, having devoted our lives, him much longer than me, well, 20 years longer than me, to the Kennedy assassination on September 11th, when we saw the second plane hit the World Trade Center, we both said, wait a minute, you can't crash one plane, right? With the FAA would have had, if you're 6 seconds off of your flight plan, the FAA is all over you, and they would have scrambled jets and intercepted that plane long before it got to New York City, but a second plane got through. Well, it couldn't possibly be more clear.
Well, I just want to back that up for a second, because flight pilots, particularly interceptor aircraft, one of their job titles, one of the things that they actually have to do in order to keep their job, is get a good night's sleep every night. All right. Interestingly enough, the reason for that is because they are on standby call. That means they sit there in the hangar playing cards with their other pilots. And as soon as the alarm goes off, they are in their plane and they are on the runway and in the air in between 30 to 45 seconds. Okay. Boom! They're out the door, right? That's how quick they're supposed to respond. So imagine if this aircraft can travel 3 to 4 times faster than any commercial airliner because it's a jet fighter. What is the possibility that any plane ever in the United States could be hijacked and reach their target without getting blown out of the sky? The answer is zero chance. Unless they happened to be playing war games on the day, so everybody was confused as to whether or not it was real world.
Yeah, except that the plane that crashed into the Pentagon 50 minutes after the first plane. Do you suppose that after the first plane hit the World Trade Center that could possibly be considered as an excuse? And you guess, maybe I shouldn't put you on the spot like this. Guess how long it takes to get from Andrews Air Force Base to the Pentagon?
Minutes.
In a fighter jet. 8 seconds.
Oh. Well, there you go.
They only had 50 minutes, so they couldn't possibly have managed to fit 8 seconds in. Anyhow, what are we talking about?
The Warren Commission whitewashing.
Forgery. I'm sorry?
The Warren Commission, whitewashing, how they appoint these commissions and things of that nature.
Well, I have to do Johnson first. Right? You have to understand this about Johnson, but let me answer that question right now since you asked it. Bobby Kennedy. It's very, very clear that Bobby Kennedy was the force behind the appointment of the Warren Commission. While I'm on the subject, well, I wasn't going to go here, but let's go here. Dealey Plaza was filled with people from Operation Mongoose. 4 or 5 of them have said, Frank Sturgis has said that he was in Dealey Plaza. Marita Lorenz is probably more famous than Frank Sturgis as being one of the Mongoose people. And she said that Sturgis told her, we're going to be decoys. We're not going to be doing the shooting. She realized that they were going to be shooting, this was a plot against JFK. The day before, she's at home, 2 station wagons full of the Mongoose people that she knew drove up, and the station wagons are full of guns, and she hopped in, and they drove to Dallas, and they went to a motel room, and E. Howard Hunt, she says, walks in and starts passing out maps and money, and she realizes what's going on, and she tells Sturgis, I'm out of here. I'm going home. I don't want anything to do with this. And Sturgis tells her, we're just going to be decoys. The point is that Dealey Plaza was filled with these Mongoose people. Ed Lansdale was the head of Mongoose. Do you know? Ed Lansdale answered to Robert Kennedy. And Robert Kennedy told his assistant, Katzenbach, to insist that the Warren Commission be set up. And Katzenbach did it. And Devil's Chessboard, remember who wrote Devil's Chessboard a couple of years ago? David Talbot interviewed Katzenbach at length, and Katzenbach was furious when he realized what the Warren Commission had. I don't think Katzenbach knew that Bobby Kennedy had been in charge of Mongoose, and when he found out, that not only was Bobby Kennedy in charge of it, but the Dealey Plaza was full of Mongoose people, he was furious that Bobby Kennedy had put him in the position. It's Katzenbach is the guy who wrote the memo saying we need to establish a commission of unquestionable authority to find that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. He wrote that memo like the day after the assassination, Sunday at the latest, which makes Katzenbach look really, really, really guilty. Anyhow, let me get to Johnson, because that's to talk about the Warren Commission. I think we have to be able to evaluate who is this guy who gave the order to form the Warren Commission. So Johnson is sitting in that limousine next to Yarborough. Johnson, like Yarborough, gets hit in the face by the shockwave from the shot from the grassy knoll. Right? If you know anything about gunshots, there's a shockwave that comes out of the barrel, and it's much more narrow than the sound wave, and it's also probably 50 times stronger than the sound wave. And if you get hit by the shockwave, it sounds very, very different and much louder and much more distinctive. And Kennedy's two closest advisors were with the Secret Service. So all of these people got hit by that shockwave and knew very, very, very definitively that there had been a shot from the grassy knoll. They also knew very, very, very definitively that the Secret Service heard the first several shots and then stopped, parked the limousine in front of the grassy knoll, and waited for the kill shot, so that they all knew that on the plane flying back to Washington from Dallas, four or five people knew very, very definitively that the Secret Service had been involved in this assassination, and they knew very, very definitively that there had been a shot from the knoll. And they also, you know, they heard the shots from behind. I did a piece on just the gunshots, and there's evidence for like 13 gunshots from behind. Those guys were not good shooters. They hit the sidewalk, right? They hit the windscreen twice in front of Kennedy. So Johnson knew that this had been a conspiracy, and on the plane, McGeorge Bundy comes in on the intercom and announces that there was one assassin and he is in custody. At the moment that he's saying this, the Dallas police are saying, oh, we know that there were multiple shooters and we're going to catch them all. So one of the main, most important JFK researchers, he was one of the first to blow the whistle and say, wait a minute. And, you know, he didn't wait for the Warren Commission report to come out. He did it based on, you know, all of the wealth of obvious, like with 9/11, right? If you were knowledgeable and the least bit suspicious and paying attention, you could see very largely what had gone on. And he says that when Bundy got on the intercom, what he was announcing, the meaning that was received by the people who were on that plane, was that there's been a coup, and I am the official spokesman for the killers, and if you want trouble, ask for it, because we got it for you. We killed this guy in broad daylight in front of his wife and 150 witnesses. We'll kill you in your sleep or in your office or wherever without blinking, standing on a street corner. Adlai Stevenson had a healthy guy, just brimming with vigor, and he had a heart attack standing next to a female CIA agent on a street corner in London, and everybody got the message, right? Johnson met his plane with his body in it at the airport. Everybody got that message. Anyhow, Johnson flies into Washington. He lands. He tries to sleep. He gets up in the morning. He walks into his office. But walking into his office, he knows that the Secret Service was involved in this assassination. The phone rings, and it's McCone, the head of the CIA. And McCone, the head of the CIA, tells Johnson, Oswald was in Mexico talking to a Russian CIA, KGB CIA assassination specialist. The Russians and the Cubans are involved. Johnson says, boy, that's not good news, and hangs up the phone, and it rings, and it's Hoover. And Hoover says, well, first of all, the military stole the body. They took over the autopsy. The body had been altered. So the military is involved in this thing. And we have the tape of Oswald in Mexico, and it is not Oswald. We have the pictures of Oswald in Mexico, and it is not Oswald. You are being lied to by the CIA, who must have had this stuff in advance, which shows that they were involved in the assassination. So that Johnson at 10 o'clock in the morning knows that the Secret Service was involved. He knows that the military was involved. He knows that the CIA was involved, and he knows that McGeorge Bundy was involved. And therefore, if Bundy's involved, who isn't involved? And Bundy was the National Security Advisor. If the National Security Advisor is involved, who isn't involved? So you have to put Johnson in that context, that he certainly, right, would feel extremely vulnerable. Now, you paying attention? Because this is one of the more complicated issues, but it's not long. It's just complex. In the movie JFK, Oliver Stone, and, you know, I will forgive him because he's doing the best he can, and he's looking. He doesn't have then what we have today in terms of declassified documents, and he believed that Johnson on Sunday issued to the National Security Council National Security Action Memorandum, NSAM 273. And in the movie, Donald Sutherland says, in that document was the Vietnam War. Well, if you get that document, and if you're informed beyond belief about, so that you can identify each word that has a volumes of coded meaning in it, Johnson says that in that memo, Kennedy's plans for withdrawal, as described in the October 6th trip report, are in effect. So, in fact, what John, right, he's walking into a room that he knows is full of killers, and he looks him in the eye and says, Kennedy's plans for withdrawal are in complete effect. Nothing has changed. And in a memo he writes the next day, he says, anybody who doesn't agree with this should be gotten rid of. So this is a guy with, if Bobby Kennedy is screaming that we need to have a Warren Commission, it's kind of hard. How do you take on the president's brother, who's also the attorney general, right? But Lyndon Johnson wasn't in charge of finding the killers. The attorney general was in charge of finding the killers, and it's the attorney general, says Katzenbach, who gave Katzenbach the order to demand that there be a Warren Commission. It is the attorney general who was also the supervisor of Operation Mongoose. So now you can read it. I had to go to my doctor and have him prescribe Adderall because I went through all of these documents, and there are 10,000 documents from the period. And you know, if you can use a search, so that I probably didn't go through more than 200 or 300 or 400 or 500 documents to tell you the story that I'm about to tell you, which is that when John Kennedy became president, his advisors immediately started beating him over the head. You have to send 300,000 troops. Right? He's been president about 5 minutes. So they want him to send 300,000 troops to Vietnam, and they want him to bomb the hell out of North Vietnam, and he resists them up until the day he dies. And when Johnson gets in, it's the same shooting match. They're beating him over the head. You gotta send troops, and you gotta bomb the hell out of the North. And they brought in Ed Lansdale. I won't do 5 minutes on Ed Lansdale, but Ed Lansdale was the head of Operation Mongoose. And after they had killed Kennedy, they brought him into Vietnam, and his specialty, I will say this, there's a movie called The Quiet American. It's based on a novel written by Graham Greene, who was the Times of London's correspondent in Vietnam. And before that, he had been an intelligence agent. So this is a guy who's, you know, got his feet and his ears to the ground. He knows, right, that's been his job for the previous, I don't know how many years, during World War II. And now he is a quote-unquote correspondent for the Times of London. Well, he also happens to be a correspondent for the British intelligence services. And he writes this thing about how Lansdale set off car bombs in the marketplace in Saigon and blamed it on the communists in order to justify the U.S. increasing involvement in Vietnam. So they bring Lansdale into Vietnam after Kennedy's been murdered, and in, I think, February of 65, no, at the end of 64, they blow up a base at Plaiku, and they kill, I don't remember, they certainly injure 125. I don't remember how many soldiers they killed, at least 20. And the week before Christmas, Maxwell Taylor, the head of the Joint Chiefs, who signed the memo saying Kennedy ordered everybody out by the end of 65, he sends Johnson a letter demanding that Johnson start sending troops and bombing because of this communist attack on Plaiku. Now, the New York Times published that Bundy had written the plan for retaliation the day before the attack. That's in the official record. The New York Times also cited the fact that the aircraft carriers that launched the planes that carried out the retaliation were in position before the attack took place. The New York Times thought that was rather curious. The New York Times also has all of this description about how incredible the attack was. It's just impossible that it was not an inside job. They didn't use that language. They didn't draw that conclusion, but they gave you all the dots, right? They didn't say, oh, so it had to have been an inside job, but they did just on and on, pounding you over the head with all of these details that show you that it had to have been an inside job. And Johnson writes back to Taylor, I believe it's Christmas Eve, and says, if you guys can't defend your bases because you're too incompetent, we will put all the planes on carriers, but I'm not going to allow your incompetence to drag me and the United States and all those soldiers into a war in Vietnam. That's not going to happen. Now, that's pretty brave, don't you think? So, and this is, right, this is a year. This is 13 months after the assassination. Johnson is saying, oh, hell no. And then 2 months later, he cracks. And it's in my video, the quote from one of his advisors saying that the day Johnson gave the order for the bombing and the troops, he looked totally devastated, totally broken. He looked like the saddest guy that this guy had ever seen. So what happened? So Robert Dallek has written biographies, renowned, right, famous, acclaimed biographies of Kennedy and F. Roosevelt and probably Truman, and I think he wrote like 1,200 pages on Johnson. And while he was doing the research, he was going to the University of Texas where the Johnson Library is and where James Galbraith, the guy who found the Taylor memo, works. And he didn't know anybody there, but he knew Galbraith. And so he would drop in on Galbraith on a regular basis and they would chat. And Galbraith told me that one day, Dallek drops in and says, oh my God, I just saw the CIA memo where the CIA told Johnson that Castro was going to shoot down his plane with him and his family on it. And in the movie, I point out that as Johnson is listening, when Johnson sees the CIA memo saying Castro is going to shoot down your plane with you and your family on it, well, let's translate this, because Johnson was already told by the CIA that Kennedy was killed by the Cubans. And he was then told by Hoover that that was a lie. Well, half of it was a lie. Kennedy was killed. That wasn't a lie. The fact that Johnson's family would be killed, Johnson was supposed to understand that part isn't a lie. The lie is that the CIA is going to do it, and they're going to blame it on Cuba, and then they are then going to use it to justify a major invasion of Cuba. And he caved.
This would be Operation Northwoods that JFK didn't sign off on, eh?
Lansdale wrote it a month after Robert Kennedy pulled him out of Vietnam. I put this in the video. I may not have. Robert Kennedy wrote a memo to McNamara saying, you have Lansdale in Vietnam. I want him to come work for me in the war on Cuba. So that there's no question, I don't think, that Northwoods was written by Lansdale at Robert's orders. There's a wealth of information to indicate that that's certainly the case. Robert loved this sort of, you know, cloak and dagger black ops stuff. And he had just brought Lansdale in. Lansdale had been working for Robert Kennedy for the length of time that it would take to produce the document, Operation Northwoods. And he then submits it to the poor idiot head of the Joint Chiefs, who signs off on it, and Kennedy looks at it and fires him. He doesn't fire Lansdale and Robert Kennedy at that point, but he fires the chairman of the Joint Chiefs for submitting that report. In my video, you will find out. So let's put this in. We have time, and I can't think of anything particularly better to talk about. Well, we haven't talked about the shooters, and you'll have to give me a time gauge. And how
we're
much
about
time we
we're about 12 minutes before the end of the show. So let's cover this first.
So it's after the Cuban Missile Crisis, right? The Russians and the U.S. have made peace. That in order to make peace, Kennedy had to swear to Castro that the U.S. would not invade Cuba. That's a very, very, very secret promise, but you can find it. And in exchange, Khrushchev would withdraw the missiles from Cuba. And then Khrushchev contacts Kennedy. He probably contacts Rusk. There's the document that you see, Rusk tells Kennedy, the Russians say that the Operation Mongoose is back in operation and they're up to their same old tricks, and Khrushchev wants to know whether he should send missiles back to Cuba or not. And Kennedy looks at Rusk and says, what the hell? He's out of his mind. And then Operation Mongoose attacks a Russian ship in the harbor of Havana. And Kennedy calls a meeting of the National Security Council, and all of them claim that they don't know anything about it, which is garbage. Robert is right on top of this, and Harriman says, I don't know anything about it. That's a total lie. Bunny says, I don't know anything about it. That's a total lie. The head of the CIA, McCone, says, we should do a better job of lying. Rusk says we should add one ship to our Coast Guard patrols to try to stop Operation Mongoose better. Bobby says, we don't know how to reach these guys. They're small operations. We don't know how to reach them. And when they're all done with their say-so, Kennedy says, so Lyndon, what do you think? And Lyndon says, we need to get the military on them and blow their asses out of the water. We need to kill them. They're trying to start World War III. We need to kill them. So Lyndon Johnson is a different guy than we have been led to believe. He was Kennedy's only ally in that meeting. In 1961, Kennedy's being bombarded every day with people saying you need to send troops to Vietnam. Kennedy sent Johnson in 61. Kennedy sent Vice President Lyndon Johnson to Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson comes back, and everybody will tell you how Lyndon Johnson called Diem the Churchill of Southeast Asia. Yeah, well, in the same memo, he said that you're under no circumstances should the United States send troops to Vietnam unless you want to end up like the French with our soldiers chasing irregulars and guerrillas all over the rice paddies of Southeast Asia. You don't want to do that. You couldn't have been more emphatic. He was John Kennedy's lone ally in not sending troops to Vietnam or bombing. And then in this crisis with Operation Mongoose attacking attacking Russian ships in the harbor of Havana, and this would have been around March, Johnson says, kill him. Well, if Kennedy had taken his advice and killed him, who would have been in Dealey Plaza? Not those guys. Anyhow, there was one more point about Robert Kennedy, but it got away from me. Oh, immediately after that, the ships got attacked, the Russian ships got attacked in the harbor of Havana, John Kennedy told Bundy to fire Lansdale and to fire Bobby. John Kennedy fired Bobby. He took him off of Cuba, and he fired Lansdale. Well, he told Lansdale, you're done with Cuba. And so Lansdale said, oh, I'll find something for me to do. And he became, right, he then supervised. He was the CEO of the assassination. And let me wrap this up and say that there's a photograph of Lansdale in Dealey Plaza. And Colonel Fletcher Prouty, it's in the movie JFK. Colonel Fletcher Prouty worked with Lansdale on a daily basis. And Prouty says, and he published it in his book, and he shows you, in the movie JFK, they show you Lansdale was in Dealey Plaza. And what Prouty did is he saw this picture of Lansdale, and he sent it to one of his bosses, General Krulak, but who, you know, they both worked with Lansdale on a daily basis. And he says, hey, General Krulak, this photograph was taken in Dealey Plaza. What do you think? And Krulak writes back, and it's in Prouty's books, and says, that's Lansdale. Look at the ring. Look at the haircut. Look at the stoop. Look at the way that he holds his left arm. That is without question Lansdale. What was he doing in Dealey Plaza? Well, they both knew what he was doing in Dealey Plaza. The FBI questioned everybody in Operation Mongoose within a week of the assassination. And all of the people in Operation Mongoose told the FBI people who questioned them, yes, I was there. No, I didn't shoot anybody. Can you prove that I shot anybody? I was there, and you can't arrest me and jail me for lying to you because I'm not going to tell you that lie. I was there. Now what? Sturgis tells that story, and any number of others, but Sturgis, and Marita Lorenz tells that story. And Marita Lorenz tells, as she tells it, she says to the FBI agents, so you want the names of the guys who were in the station wagons that drove up full of all these guns? And they say, no, that's all right. We've already questioned them. We knew you weren't there, but and we questioned the guys who were there, so that Johnson knew almost everything. Now, how many minutes we got? Five?
Yep, less than.
So, Hunt was a shooter on the Grassy Knoll, and that's in the movie, and there's a mountain of evidence for it. E. Howard Hunt, the head of the Watergate burglars, Hunt worked for Averill Harriman. He brags about it when he's on the stand in one of the trials that he was in. George Bush, geez, it's just incredible. You got to watch the movie to see the mountain of evidence indicating Bush was arrested as a shooter. Detective Vaughn arrested a guy coming out of the Daltex building as a shooter, and the guy told him on the way across the street to the police station that he was an independent oil contractor from Houston. Bush gave a speech the night before at the Dallas Sheraton to an organization of independent oil contractors. David Morales is identified. David Morales said, he told his two best friends, who said so on camera, that he was in Dallas and was involved in the assassination, and he matches the description given by several people of who the shooters were. A guy named Shackley. All of these, the video of Shackley being arrested, Galbraith sends me this still from it and says, you know who this guy is? I said, sure, that's Ted Shackley. It's very, 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 very clearly Shackley. So those are the shooters, and they all worked for Lansdale, every single one of them. They all worked in the same Operation Mongoose office, and they all worked for Harriman. Harriman was the richest guy in the United States, but he was a minion of Brown Brothers Harriman. And if we had 20 minutes, I'd give you 20 minutes of evidence that Harriman worked for Brown Brothers Harriman. At the Brown Brothers Harriman website, it says that they were taken over by the Bank of England in 1837. Well, in 1825, the Rothschilds bragged that they took over the Bank of England in 1825. They took over Brown Brothers in 1837, and they took over Averill Harriman probably around 1920. So that you can draw a very, very short, straight, black and white. And they're you hit the start of the show, at the top of the show, you talked about that we're all on the plantation. The Rothschilds are the guys who owned the plantation and have owned the plantation since the 1700s.
Indeed. John, thank you so much for your time on the show here today and sharing your expertise and your experience with us. Can you please just quickly get people the website and addresses where people can find your work, your latest documentary as well there?
Okay. If you type in Breakthrough JFK Murder Solved. You might be able to find it on YouTube if they haven't taken me down again. You can find it on Vimeo. If you go to Vimeo and type in Breakthrough JFK, it will come up. If you go to Amazon, you have to put in the whole title. If you want Amazon to let you buy the DVD, they won't let you stream it, but you can buy the DVD for $13 delivered tomorrow. Breakthrough JFK Murder Solved. And if you go to darkroom.film, if you're a film buff, go to darkroom.film. They have so many really, really terrific movies there, but they also have all of mine. That's the huge advantage to going to darkroom.film, is that they have several of my movies, all of which you'll want to see. Amazon also has Dark Legacy and Dark Legacy 2, only now they will make you buy them, but you can stream them. I believe you can at least buy them and stream them. You can rent them and stream them. At Vimeo, you can rent it for 99 cents. So, Vinny, thank you so much for allowing me to do that plug.
Awesome, brother. You have yourself a really wonderful day, and I am looking forward to actually seeing the documentary myself now. So good on you, brother. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for supporting the broadcast. You can get merch on the website, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And of course, the main way to support the show is by looking at all those latest shows and helping out our sponsors, Holden Healthcare and reopen.nz as well. So with that being said, I would like to thank you, John, so much for joining us today, and thank you very much as well, of course, to the wonderful network who has just taken us up, groundzero.radio. I'm very appreciative for that. And with that being said, everybody, that is the end of the show today, and we will see you again next time at the Vinny Eastwood Show.
Attention all Ground Zero radio fans. GroundZeroMerch.com is your one-stop shop for all things Ground Zero.
Oh, wow.
Show off your style with our exclusive collection of t-shirts and hoodies. They're not just comfortable, they're conversation starters. Whoa. Need to keep hydrated during those long listen sessions? Get your hands on our durable water bottles. And now introducing our latest additions, a hand-picked selection of intriguing books that will keep your mind buzzing. GroundZeroMerch.com. Support Ground Zero and everything we do.
My Patriot Supply is America's leading emergency preparedness company, and believe it's every person's patriotic duty to achieve true freedom from our world's increasingly unreliable and fragile systems. The best way to do this is to invest in your personal liberty, because you can't rely on governments or corporations for the basics of life. Act now and secure at least a 4-week emergency food kit full of tasty meals that provide 2,000 calories a day. They have dozens of emergency food storage kits to choose from, along with a variety of survival products. Despite these difficult times, My Patriot Supply has kept their commitment to you with well-stocked emergency supplies. They will deliver them quickly and discreetly with friendly 24/7 customer service. Stay alert and prepared, friends. Let everyone else take tomorrow for granted. Go to preparewithgroundzero.com. That's preparewithgroundzero.com.
Do you want to know why your inalienable rights are so vital in these uncertain times? Check out the Unsuppressed podcast on aftermath.media. Join Wes, Bill, Patrick, and Avery as they discuss the fundamentals of urban and wilderness survival, disaster preparedness, gear discussions, and so much more. Check it out with your premium Aftermath subscription, and make sure you stay unsuppressed.
If you're looking for a thought-provoking multimedia platform about current events, trending news, pop culture, conspiracies, and the paranormal, you need to sign up for Ground Zero's exclusive digital playground, aftermath.media. Their website includes years of archived shows and podcasts from Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis and The Secret Teachings with Ryan Gable. You'll have access to over 200 documentaries and movies from some of the greatest minds in the last 50 years in their video section. In addition, you can watch live video stream of Ground Zero. Also, there's monthly chats with Clyde along with intriguing and educational webinars. Each subscription includes tech support, RSS feeds, a chat room, and social media channel. Be sure to check out their yearly specials for basic and premium memberships. So sign up today at aftermath.media. That's aftermath.media.